Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben of the Lean Blog, and this is episode number 8 of the Lean Blog Podcast. It's Halloween, October 31st, 2006, and maybe the only scary thing we have for you today might be our topic. Some people consider the idea of accounting or talking about or sitting down and listening to talk about accounting to be a scary thing, but I hope you'll hang in there today and enjoy the conversation with my guest, Jim Hunsinger. He's the president of the Lean Accounting Summit, which was just held successfully not long ago. It's an annual event now and something that I'm sure some of our blog readers and podcast listeners have attended. They had over 500 attendees this year, and that summit's been growing quite a bit each year. Now about Jim, he's got more than 17 years of experience developing lean enterprises through system design and development, implementation, and guiding organizations both strategically and tactically through the transformation process. He's worked with a number of companies in his career, Aisin Sakai, Briggs & Stratton, and he's also served as consultant to many companies in their lean journeys. Jim got into the field of lean accounting doing master's research, and that led to some of his articles and the Lean Accounting Summit. You can find links to his website and some of his work on the Lean Blog website. Our guest today is Jim Hunsinger. Jim, thanks for being here on the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I'm very glad to be here.
For our podcast listeners, I was wondering if you could start off by giving us a brief background of what lean accounting is.
Yeah, what lean accounting is, and I may add in here at first, it is still kind of an evolving concepts and ideas and so forth, but what it's really about is kind of twofold. One is about lean accounting, as we might call it, and that's about just improving the accounting processes, the processes within accounting, some pretty much under the same context as we look at anything lean, you know, eliminating waste from those processes to improve them. The other side, and a more larger side of it is sometimes referred to as accounting for lean, or how does the accounting function help and support the enterprises that transitions to lean, and that could be quite a bigger picture to look at.
Sure. And what are some of the major conflicts that come up sometimes between lean and the traditional accounting systems? How did you discover that in the course of your work?
Would you like me to, I guess, go back to the beginning on that?
Sure.
Okay. Well, the way this happened to me was years ago, and this is, well, closing on 16, 17 years ago, I was involved with a transformation at a company I worked for, and we were moving traditional departments into one-piece flow cells, and one of the things they wanted us to do was do an ROI on this change we were making. Mm-hmm. So that got me involved with our standard costing system, and as I got involved with that, I discovered that basically the information it generated was completely inaccurate. And that was very distressing to me because mm-hmm. we basically based all our business decisions on that cost information that it generated, and it was absolutely incorrect. So that's one of the major conflicts with it in general is the information that standard costing systems generate can generally be incorrect information. So if you're basing your business decisions off that, you're basing it off incorrect information.
Yeah, and incorrect in what sorts of ways specifically?
It's distorted. The example I discovered on a specific product I was working on for machining we had 30 or 40 different variations of this product, and so we had cost information on each of those variations, each of those different part numbers, and the one that was extremely high volume, and the volume on this was about 1 million per year. And 70% of one of the part numbers was the 70% of the volume for one part number, and it gave a particular cost. And it was a pretty straightforward, pretty easy to machine version of it. Mm-hmm. Another one that was under 3% of the overall volume was much more complex. It had a pinion gear on it, so it had, you know, extra processes like gear shaping, hardening, extra turning, extra grinding. So expensive processes. And our costing system showed that to be quite a bit less for us to manufacture, which, you know, simply was not true.
Yeah. Didn't seem
so
intuitively
that, that was, yeah. Yeah, that was initially the distortion I saw with it, and as I dove into it deeper, you know, I could see that's basically what it led to, and a lot of that's due really to the allocation process. That's kind of the other side of it, the overhead allocation, where basically what you're trying to do is divvy up this large glob of cost, spread it out, you know, evenly over different products. Well, that just by the nature of that, it's going to give a distorted cost picture to those products because not all products, processes, consume resources at the same rate. And when you get into, you know, very complex operations, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a very simple operation, it isn't so bad, but the aggregate of that in a very complex organization is just going to be inaccurate. And the cost to make it accurate mm-hmm. by far outweighs the benefit you would get from it.
So as you were moving towards flow production and putting lean practices in place, were there certain sorts of bad decisions that were being driven by that inaccurate costing, either in terms of pricing of products or just, you know, profit analysis of different types of products, deciding if you should continue building certain variations of the products?
Yeah, I mean, I have to assume so. I mean, knowing that the output of the information of the cost led to whether we make or buy type decisions mm-hmm. and other things like that. I mean, you know, I don't have an example of, and that's one of the problems with the current system. If you know the cost is wrong, but what should it be, but you don't have a system in place to tell you what it's going to be, you know, if how far off, you know, high or low or accurate or not, you have really no idea. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you're really driving it blindly in the dark.
Sure.
And again, that's what I saw the problem was with it, and we use that information like it was accurate mm-hmm. to make, you know, so we outsourced some things, and a variety of things went into making that decision, but the cost we saw that it cost us was the major player in that decision making.
Yeah. So part of the idea of developing accounting for lean, challenging some of the existing practices, right? I assume we have, you know, old accounting practices and nowadays, you know, computer software and ERP systems that can calculate everything to four decimal places. But I guess we're stepping back and challenging some of the assumptions that go into those supposedly precise calculations.
Yeah, and the problem with some of those systems and calculating that, they're fundamental, in a way, the fundamental math that they were based on when they were developed, I think back in the, I can't remember exactly, 50s or 60s, mm-hmm. is this the absorption costing process. So that is embedded within those systems. So, you know, functionally it makes it easier to do because you have a computer crunching those numbers, mm-hmm. but it's still crunching the numbers incorrectly, which is, you know, at the core of the problem.
So beyond costing, do you run into problems with inventory reductions that usually come about through lean and the impact on the balance sheet, you know, with inventory being considered an asset from an accounting standpoint? Are there some problems or dysfunctions that come up as a result of that?
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, it does cause dysfunctions because all of a sudden they see a loss due to the inventory going away, and then, you know, things get in uproar because of that. Now, for as long as that's been known about and as much as that's been talked about, I guess today I still get shocked on it's that is a shocker to companies and people, but it still seems to be the case. So obviously educating on what happens on the balance sheet is still necessary and is still out there, and people need to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. That's simply going to be a result of the improvement. And that's where, again, some of the problem comes with it is relying on simply the numbers to manage the operation. And the interesting thing is Tom Johnson has done a lot of work and a lot of writing that really illustrates this point very well in a number of books he has done over the years, Profit Beyond Measure and Relevance Lost, mm-hmm. really describes that out real well. But the other interesting thing I found in the research and work I've done is the gentleman that developed these processes and procedures and methods that all these came out of the Industrial Revolution in the United States, they recognized all these problems back when they developed this stuff, and even warned against using these methods and processes for calculation and other such stuff in cost accounting, managerial accounting, because they said it would lead you to incorrect decision making mm-hmm. if you use it in a sense in this aggregate situation, which we do. So they knew it was a problem, but that wasn't their purpose with it. They had a different purpose with it. So to them, they weren't the problem, but the problem wasn't a problem for them because they understood what its purpose was.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, it was just simply their decision-making back then was based more on their intimate understanding of the products, processes, and the market. That's how they made their decisions.
Now, you know, we find a lot of companies today, manufacturing companies, big, large, you know, public companies, even some of the automakers, have traditionally been run by people from the finance area, either, you know, accountants or business people, you know, general, you know, finance folks, as opposed to being product people or, you know, the way you describe it, people who maybe intimately know the products. You know, we have this notion of, you know, professional managers who, just to use a recent example, jump from the aerospace industry to the automotive industry. You know, does some of that lead to problems in maybe adopting new accounting practices? Do you find more success in a company that's run maybe by the manufacturing folks as opposed to finance?
Not necessarily. I mean, I don't want to be picking on the accountants and the finance
right.
people. And it's because you need those people. Those people are not only very important, critical to the success of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real problem comes in, and this may stem in, is even as engineers go through training, get their MBAs, they get trained on the same types of problems and issues. So whether they're coming out of operations, now they're going to have a more intimate understanding of operations. It's a good thing, but it's really the way they view the business, and that is simply we can manage the business by knowing these numbers,
mm-hmm.
and versus do we have an intimate understanding of our customers, the market, and our products and processes. So either
right.
if you're an accountant, you can still gain that knowledge. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to go out and get an engineering degree or by that, but you still can mm-hmm. become relatively intimate with the operations, your products, the market, which is where you're going to make the best decisions from. Then the financial information just becomes a support function to say, okay, we think the market wants this, we think we need this type of product. Then we can use the financial information, the costing information, to say, yes, that is a good decision from a cost standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to the founders of all this stuff during the Industrial Revolution, that was their view of what the cost information was for. It was a support function to verify the decisions they were making by being mm-hmm. intimate with the market and the products
yeah.
and processes.
A support function as opposed to the primary or the only
yes.
source of information. Okay.
Yeah, it was a support function, not the driving function.
Sure. And, you know, we talk about running businesses by the numbers, and you mentioned, you know, the idea of preparing executives within a company at the beginning of a lean initiative that, you know, we are going to reduce inventory. This is going to have some impact on profit loss, you know, be prepared for that. But Wall Street, you know, of course, runs or looks at the numbers within companies, and that's another stakeholder, you know, it would seem, for a lot of large public companies. In either working with lean or particularly lean accounting, do you find it easier if a company is private or smaller to be able to make some of these changes or even, you know, accept a short-term one-time hit in profit loss as opposed to larger public companies that worry more about Wall Street and the analysts?
Yeah, I think it makes it easier, although I think it really comes down to the understanding, whether it's a private or public company, the understanding of the leadership is critical. Now, obviously, being a public company, that is one more hurdle and a big hurdle to get by because
sure.
it's so short-term driven, you know, stock price driven and all that, and some things you may do in the short term by implementing lean. And we mentioned, you know, one earlier about, you know, the assets dropping off because you're reducing inventory can hit you in the short term and cause some issues and problems for that.
Right.
That you wouldn't have in a private company. I mean, basically there you can, do what you want, you know, with the business because you're not reporting to this, you still have to follow certain stipulations, but you're not reporting
right.
out to these external entities. So it's really more of a hurdle and a big hurdle that public companies have to go around. And so far, they've had difficulty with that one.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it comes back to the old challenge of, you know, short-term thinking versus long-term thinking, where lean and Toyota Production System tries to get us to focus on the long-term, but it seems like, you know, the quarterly reporting and some of the financial measures stock price and other things that executives or the companies end up worrying about are very much short-term driven.
Yeah, but there are companies, public companies out there that have been successful with that, and a lot of that came from two things. One, from the understanding of the leadership, and it just relates mm-hmm. back to that, and then the leadership educating their board members and some of their auditors and other people on this is what they're doing, and this is why, and this is how it's beneficial for us in the long term.
Sure.
And they've been successful with that. But that's still, unfortunately, a fairly small number.
Right. So speaking of success stories, you just recently had this year's Lean Accounting Summit. Were there some specific success stories or companies that was there presenting some of the changes they've made? What are some of the real particular success stories that you heard about there?
Yeah, there's some. There's still not that many, and it's just because so many companies have not gone very far from a lean accounting perspective. For example, I would get calls during the year about companies coming and curious about what they should go to, and they would always comment, well, we're just not as far along in lean accounting as other companies. And what I'd explain to them, I'd tell them, well, if you've been involved with it a couple months, you're actually out on the cutting edge and have been involved with it for quite a while, relatively speaking.
Sure.
So I said everybody's somewhat in that same boat, but companies that have made some good progress with it and are reaping the benefits from it. One company that actually came in 2005 summit and brought a big contingency there, only their CFO came to the 2006, and I talked with him about it, and the reason why, he said, we learned so much from the first one, and we're so excited, and we're doing so much that we're still busy applying what we learned from the first one. But he said, we'll be back definitely in numbers in 07 because they got so much out of it. So that's kind of excitement and actuation that we want to see from companies and hope to see, because they're already with what they've done in a year, which they said we still have a very long ways to go, but they're very much seeing the benefit from it, financially, as well as with just changing the culture within the company itself.
And that does take time, sure.
Yeah, but it's fed into their excitement. The excitement they initially had has been fed back into by, the successes they've had here in a short time they've been working on it.
Mm-hmm. And it sounded like the summit was quite successful. You had over 500 attendees this year, is that right?
Yeah, over 500 attendees, nearly doubled from the year before, so that's good. The message is getting out. More people are aware of it, and more people are, working to try to get engaged with it, and we're very excited about that.
Yeah, well, great. It sounds like, other lean conferences that I've attended, the general theme is, people coming to hear from others who have already done it, or, you come to hear the experts. It sounds like the climate with the Lean Accounting Summit is more of one of, here's a group with shared interests. Let's get together and figure it out as we go. Is that a fair way of describing the state of lean accounting right now?
Yeah, we got it. I mean, we have the group of thought leaders, is they like to refer themselves the learning leaders there, that are a very knowledgeable, very experienced group, and also very passionate about this topic and wanting to help people do it. And I think that's one of the things that helped the summit to be so successful, is the people that attend really pick up on not only that knowledge and their experience and all that, but also the passion that these guys are driven by. And also, too, the more we move forward, the more companies that we'll have that have very good stories to tell, of their positive and negative experience of going through the process. And we want more of that in our attendees. We definitely have gotten substantial feedback from our attendees, which is wonderful for us, because that really helps us with the planning process and putting together a program that people want to hear about and to help it grow and move forward. But also, too, as we move forward, we'll have more companies that have more experience under their belt on what it takes and what they've done and what's successful and what's not. And attendees are very interested in learning about that, so we definitely want to give that to them.
Are the attendees in general a mix of large and small companies? Are there any trends you see as far as who's attending being an indicator of who's most actively working on lean accounting?
No, not really. We have a very good mix of companies, from very large, very, very large publicly held companies down to very small privately held companies. Mm-hmm. So we have a very broad range of companies, and from a variety of industries too, and not only manufacturing companies, we've had some healthcare. We've also had some overseas people coming from South America and also Europe have came to it. So we were seeing quite a variety of people and organizations and industries show up for this, which again is very good because it's something that's more than just industry that affects.
Mm-hmm. What are the plans for 07? I assume another Lean Accounting Summit. Are there other things that you're working on?
Yeah, the plan for the 2007 summit, like I said, is we've gotten fabulous feedback from our attendees and even our presenters, and we really work on a mix of what the presenters, what they see as they're out there working with companies, what they get from feedback from the people that participate in the summit, and then also, too, on what the attendees want to see. What did they like? What didn't they like? What do they want to see more of? And so forth. And then we adjust to try to accommodate that. And some other things we're working on, actually coming up in 2007 is we're going to have a conference or summit on a topic from training, known as Training Within Industries, a TWI summit is what we call it. That's actually, I don't want to say emerging because it has a long history and has been around for a while, but re-emerging back in the United States. And has really picked up a lot of steam and significant interest in the last 12 months, and actually is another critical item, fundamental item from a Toyota production system standpoint that's really making ground here back in the United States. And it was around during World War II and made a significant impact, but it's starting to return.
Yeah, and you wrote an article about that I saw in the AME Target magazine. And is there? I think I saw. Is there a book out in the market this year about the TWI program?
Yeah, there's a couple books. One came out, I believe it was last year, by Don DeNiro, came out last year, that kind of that went through in very, very good detail the history of it and, you know, behind what it did for the United States and what it was about. Another book came out this year on TWI by Patrick Graup and Bob Rona. And it's really kind of a TWI workbook. It really goes down through and explains the actual training programs that were developed out of it in detail on how those function and work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, hopefully if you'll come back and join us for a future podcast, we can talk about the TWI program and the revitalization or kind of rediscovery of that, maybe as a separate topic. And for the podcast listeners, I'll put links on my website, www.leanpodcast.org. It has links to the different books and articles that were mentioned. Jim's website is www.leanaccountingsummit.com. Any other resources that you would point people to if they're curious to learn more about lean accounting?
Yeah, a couple things I might mention. One is you pointed to the Lean Accounting Summit website. There's something you can click on there that actually give a list of books by a lot of our thought leaders that on a topic, on many topics, but obviously a lot on lean accounting. There is also, if you would go to AME's Association of Manufacturing Excellence website, we did an article last year on lean accounting titled Lean Accounting, What's It All About. It's actually, I think, the first issue of 2006 as kind of a cumulative framework of what lean accounting is, at least as we see it currently, knowing that it's going to be an evolving thing.
Sure. Well, great. Well, I'll make sure links are out there on the website. Jim, thanks a lot for being here today and giving us kind of the background and introduction to lean accounting. Really appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.